Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification.
Aye, sir.
The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. You should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the event horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the Event Horizon, where the impossible happens. Join us each week at this time as we delve into the worlds of science fiction, fantasy, and science fact in all their forms. I am your host, Gene Turnbow.
And I am your other host, Susan Fox.
And with us today is Wesley Clark. You've heard about the whole one man wearing many hats during a film production. Wesley is the hat rack. Welcome to the show, Wesley.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And the movie that we're talking about is not your first one. Sirona, was that your first feature film?
My first feature film, yeah.
Yeah, which has gotten something like a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is...
Yeah, I know. You have to be a big studio for that normally.
Yeah, holy snap. But the new one, which is the sequel to it, which you are... it's called Sirona Valkyrie's Shadow, and you are doing a Kickstarter to get that going. So...
Yeah.
Tell us a little about the original film and how you got there and the new project and how things are going.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sirona started off as just like a fun idea between friends and I, where we had been making shorts for quite a while, just practicing and getting our film feet wet, if you will, in the film world, and a lot of fan films and things like that, just stuff that you can't really sell. And So we originally kicked around an idea that was an original, and we're like, hey, let's actually try and do something with this. Little did we know how much work that actually is, hence the multiple hats.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All the stuff that you forget that goes into a film production, I got to do the... You know, I got to stand here and do all of these Xerox copies, and this is going to take 3 hours.
Right. Yeah. It was like a wave of film school, essentially. Like, it just so much you had to learn and whatnot. I mean, we knew the basics, so we had the foundation to really get it going. But when we got into the the grind, it became a lot more than we expected. But yeah, my friends and I are just a bunch of, you know, sci-fi fans and nerds, if you will, like anything from Star Trek to superheroes to anything like that. And if you've seen the film, it's about a young girl that escapes a government facility, and she has a supernatural ability to heal people. And I wanted to play on more, like, instead of like a superhero film, more like a Guillermo del Toro take, where it's like she's perceived as a monster, but she's not, kind of thing. And the facility that she escaped from contracts some mercenaries to hunt her down without explaining to them what she is. And much to, you know, the way things unfold in the story, they discover it and are faced with a dilemma. First of all, she's a young girl. They weren't told that. So morality starts to set in a little bit. Like, are we doing the right thing? And then she heals someone in front of them, and then everything changes. Like,
yeah,
what
yeah.
The heck is going
oh, yeah.
On?
Of course it would change. And
yeah.
Out of curiosity, I haven't seen the film yet. Does she have the ability to heal herself, or does that ever come up?
First
it does.
Thing.
She can heal herself. Minor spoiler alert, it's like the first couple minutes of the film, but the person that helps her escape is actually her brother, who is in captivity with her as well. When he touches people, it actually kills them.
Oh.
But they cannot affect each other. So he can't hurt her and she can't help him. So they kind of cancel each other out.
That of all the superpowers to have, that one sucks. Yeah.
Sort of the dark side of the curse. Wonder Twins.
Yeah. So she can heal herself and others. The sequel we're gearing up to tell, I end the first film on a pretty big, like just a cliffhanger, and it threw a lot of people off because a lot of films don't do that much anymore. And it really generated a lot of demand from people that liked the film to say, where's the sequel? I need the next one. I need the next one. And it was written, but I was still kind of seeing how the first one was doing in the market before I kind of decided to pull that trigger.
So the cliffhanger trick actually still works. That's good to know.
I actually got a comment on our social media page the other day. It was pretty funny. This gentleman who had just watched the movie, he's like, I just watched this on Amazon Prime and I had to come see if they were making a sequel because the way that ended was just criminal.
That's awesome. I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah. Well, originally I did want to do just one film, but the story, when I started writing it, it was just too big. It was just too big to cram into one thing. We did kick around an idea. Should we do a series or a web series or whatever? Ultimately, it made more sense just to make it like a 3-film trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
It just made more sense to do it that way. And being a huge Star Wars fan as well, the sequel is, I heavily relate it to Empire Strikes Back. It's pumped up in a lot of ways, much like Empire was for Star Wars, just a lot more gritty, a little more impactful. And then just that ending leaving you like, oh my gosh, I have to see how this ends kind of thing, you know? So much inspiration came from that kind of storytelling.
You know, The Empire Strikes Back is perceived by many to be the best of the first 3 Star Trek films. Star Wars films.
Oh, you're going to get slapped.
You're going to get called out.
So I'm going to get phone calls on this and emails. Yeah. I loved the fact that it was so well done. And I was really frustrated that film also ended on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And you mean I gotta wait 3 years to see the next chapter? Frickety frackin', in other words, I can't say on the radio. But it was so good. The immersion in that universe was so good. And I am guessing that the world building that you did for Serona was strong enough to let you do, I mean, you were talking about a series at one point.
Well, I mean, you know, a couple of, you know, 3 2-hour movies is equal to whatever they do on the BBC these days. That was a season of Sherlock, for instance.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, though, that was actually probably the biggest thing we got praised on was the characterization and the world itself. That seemed to have resonated with most of the audience is what they liked the most about it. This film, just to kind of backtrack a little bit, I am no means going to compare it to Empire Strikes Back. It's just an inspiration.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, of course.
Because much like what you just said, I do consider that like the best Star Wars film. I love that film so much. Comparing my film to them is a bit, I would say, heresy.
Yeah, but you do have a number of role models of that.
Yes.
You know, it didn't used to be that sequels were as good as the original, and then you get Star Wars, and then you get Aliens, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, which was different, but the same universe, and the world building just kept building and building and building.
Exactly. That's the exact model we're trying to follow was, like you said, some sequels just don't quite hit the mark nowadays.
Probably
because sometimes the first film just set the bar too high, so it doesn't leave you enough anywhere to go.
Well, and the other part of it is that they haven't thought out the backstory well enough to give them foundation for a second film. And then they're stuck with this hit, and I say that, you know, facetiously, but they're stuck with a movie that needs a sequel because the investors want one, and now what do you do? You're trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear from a writing standpoint.
But you know, you start out at the top of the foothills, and there's Mount Everest behind you. So what are we going to see as we climb Mount Everest?
Yeah, no, it's... So the first one, for all intents and purposes, does, like, it just screams indie film. It is smaller for all intents and purposes. However, a lot of people were shocked that it was an indie film because my cinematographer / director of photography crushed it. He made it look so beautiful. And the first film just spent the time getting you familiar with these characters, helping you grow to care about them, and kind of giving that looming threat in the background of what's to come and the repercussions of their decisions. The climb, if you will, at Mount Everest is those repercussions. They made a decision, they're helping this girl, and just because they're doing the right thing doesn't mean that everything's going to work out perfectly. They're about to face the music, if you will, on that.
These aren't mercenaries who are just, you know, clay pigeons that you knock down. These are people. These are characters, you know, that are fully realized.
Yeah, they're all people. And the thing we were compared to a lot were ensemble movies, such as The Losers. Someone compared us, actually we had a few people compare us to Firefly, just as far as the characterization goes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a good one. That's
She's
a good
River.
Comparison to.
Again, another thing, because I love Firefly, it was flattering to get that compliment, but I'm almost like, you know, that's, again, you're setting the bar here.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm still an indie film, so don't make people think that they're actually going to see Firefly. But people were connecting because I casted different personality types. You had the leader that was humble and just. You had the soldier that was angry and gruff. You had the, you know, the cool one, the sniper, which is a female character named Julie. And then you had the comedian. So a lot of people compared it to A-Team as well because of that. Mm-hmm. And it was enough personality types to handle this scenario that made it interesting enough for people to stay engaged throughout the story.
It always comes down to the writing. It always comes down to the writing. And, well, and the fact that you had a cinematographer who could really take, you know, minimal technical support in terms of production and turn it into more production value than you really had in your budget.
Oh, yeah.
That makes so much difference. It's like, if you don't have that in your quiver, you're not going to hit anything.
Right.
Yeah, well, he had good directing on his side too. The director has to know where to place everybody for their best.
Oh yeah,
you know, to their best advantage. And you had some great backgrounds, location shots. You know, you're out in nature in the first part of the film, and they're very different biomes. You know, you start out in a forest, and then somehow you're in like a grassland or a farm. Where were these places? These aren't the same old, you know, parts of Griffith Park that you know, we used in film school.
So yeah, actually, I don't know if any of you knew this, but I live in Colorado, and we made the whole thing in Colorado. So I used the terrain here to my advantage. I pulled strings of contacts I knew that lived out in the plains, and then people that lived up in the mountains, and combined all my resources to actually shoot on location. And yes, it is gorgeous, but it is a pain when you're filming it out in the wilderness.
Oh, yeah, because absolutely everything you need has to be brought in with you. And when you leave, every scrap of it has to leave with you.
Well, you expect that on a location shoot wherever you are.
Well, that's true, but you're especially aware of it when you're out in a national park or something.
Listen, you don't have anybody walking through the scene or hikers wandering. Here, what are you doing now? Can I be in it?
The buses.
Fortunately, we were able to lock in private pieces of land, so we did not have to deal with people interrupting, which was nice.
So you didn't have like public roads running right through the middle of the big battle scene and things like that, you know?
Right. Fun little behind the scenes bit. In the film, there's a cabin that Serona stumbles across and ends up hiding out at. And that cabin in the film, we tried to make look as remote as possible because she's wandering through the woods, like no man's land, essentially. That cabin's actually right off a highway.
Oh, right. Yeah, you swing the camera around and there's the pavement. One of those things.
Yeah.
Cool.
We had to be very
That's cool.
calculated with how we filmed because it is a highway. So cars flying by and stuff. We had to be... It was, again, another
like
pain in the
wait,
butt.
Wait for the traffic and there's nobody, you know, there's nobody for 2 miles in any direction. Roll film.
Yeah, there was a lot of shots where our sound recordist would hold up his mic just listening for cars and fell off it to tell us if it was good.
Oh, God. Guerrilla filmmaking at its finest, man.
Oh, absolutely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So... one of the big things that makes the film look good, once you've got the footage, is color matching and timing the shots. Did you work out a color storyboard for this before you started editing?
We had a shot list, but we did not have a storyboard. It was a lot of just direct communication between my director of photography and I. Luckily, he and I were just able to read each other. This man can straight up just read my mind. Like, he knew exactly what I was going for. I did basically like 90% of the post work. So mm-hmm. I did all the coloring and editing and sound mixing and all that. And so because he was getting that shot the way I needed to, I knew how to make that happen in post. So
yeah, that's awesome. Color matching is frequently what kills an independent film because the filmmakers are directing and editing and sound and location scouts and getting the performance and the writing. And then they forget, there are some technical issues here that'll make or break this scene that I don't know how to do. Or they don't even realize that they don't know how to do it. And you get your footage back. And there's room tone on every piece of dialogue
that you can't... Having to re-record that is another nightmare.
You know, I mean, nowadays, you could put audio footage like that through an AI filter and have it clean up the room tone, which is amazing stuff that, you know, 3 years mm-hmm. ago, you couldn't do that. How many of those sorts of problems did you encounter? It's like the technical... Oh my God, I had no idea that this thing was going
to
break.
This is why we go to film school.
I would say specifically to the audio piece of that, there was a scene in the film. We made a bad call. We decided to let the audio guy lav a couple people up, and then he was just going to boom the whole room. Well, it turns out one of the lavs was not working.
Oh no.
So all you had was boom tone, boom, boom, boom. And
he couldn't tell. And we didn't know until it got to post. And I'm like, I have to ADR this whole scene for this person. Fortunately, again, just more film school, if you will, I had to learn and download and learn a program that allowed me to manipulate certain audio waves to clean it up and match mm-hmm. the room tone exactly. So I had to do that by hand, but it worked.
Yeah, can't argue. It's not stupid. It's not a stupid idea if it works.
Yeah.
Which one was that? Was that Capstan or?
I used Isotope RX-8.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. Yeah. That's for those listening, the audio processing software that's available now is just astonishing, and the Isotope line is one of the better software lines out of all of them. So yeah, imagine. I can't imagine because I've been stuck that way a couple times.
You wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah, the crazy stuff that goes on, you know, like you get everything back and you've got every shot you need except that one angle,
because mm-hmm. you didn't have a continuity, you know, somebody watching continuity on the set that one day.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. There was actually a small thing, speaking of continuity, so one other thing I did in the film is I was one of the actors, mainly to save on budget because
sure. Oh yeah.
One less person I have to pay. And there was a day that someone was not on set that was watching the continuity of my costume, and my sleeves throughout the entire movie were halfway rolled up, just past my elbows.
Mm-hmm.
And then one scene, they're down.
Oh no.
And fortunately, there was a scene we still had to film in between those two where we just literally we caught it. And we showed my character just kind of rolling his sleeves down and then called it good.
Yes. So excellent.
Just kept him down the rest of the film.
Excellent. Yeah. Good yeah. catch, man. That's
yeah.
Yeah. Those kinds of continuity is another one of those often overlooked jobs.
Yeah. And then your fans will bug you about it forever. I wound up in a Star Trek chat, you know, why was Nurse Chapel's, you know, uniform red in one scene in this animated episode? I'm going, because somebody didn't get somebody in ink and paint didn't get the message that it was supposed to be blue, and two other people had to have passed it first, and they didn't catch it either.
Mm-hmm.
and here we are 50 years later complaining about it.
Yeah, there's a... I go back and forth on that particular issue because some people just like to find stuff that's wrong. It's like their thing, and they're not doing it to be cynical. They're uh-huh. just like they like to catch movie errors.
Hey, if it gets you more clicks,
absolutely. Do it. My goal was to not get. If I was going to get any complaints about this movie, it was not to be that. Fortunately, I haven't seen any yet, so I think there's still time. So,
and
there's still time for the next one. When do you go into production?
So we're currently in pre-production. We plan to launch our crowdfunding campaign on September 24th. We've already locked in two investors that are piling money on top of our crowdfunding efforts. And I've got a few more investors on the stove right now, just mm-hmm. kind of going through the contracts and stuff like that, see if they're interested. If all goes well, we plan to actually start production, depending on everyone's schedule, by spring 2025. But most likely summer 2025 is what it'll fall to. And if we get a big enough budget, I will be able to hire a professional team to help in post-production so we have a quicker turnaround versus me just doing it by myself again. So
yeah, it's difficult for any production when the critical path all flows through one single person. Because everything, you know, it's not that that's bad inherently, but it does mean that everything is serially dependent.
Yeah, but there's less explaining it to other people too.
Well, that's true, but you know, it's nice if you can get things running in parallel, because that way it doesn't take till doomsday to get it done.
Right, exactly.
So, when does the Kickstarter start?
September 24th.
Okay, well, we'll have to throw some money at you, and so will everybody else listening today.
Indeed.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Actually, we actually rerun these episodes, so we'll run you initially, and then, like, a couple weeks later, we'll pop it in again to make
okay,
sure.
Okay, yeah.
You know, because,
and then just to clear up any confusion, because if audience members do want to help us, it's a crowdfunding, but it's actually not through Kickstarter. It's actually through Seed and Spark, the film-based one. Yeah.
How are they to work with? We're not familiar with them.
They're different. They're good. They're very responsive and very helpful. They do have they can be a lot more picky than, you know, Kickstarter as far as certain guidelines that they want to follow. But it's all in the sake of, you know, helping you reach your goal. So they're a lot more mm-hmm. hands-on.
Hmm. That is something I'm going to have to edit out.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Okay. I can't see that far. You take a time check on that.
We are at, I'm sorry. We're at 29 minutes and counting.
Yeah, we can go.
Yeah, we
unless,
can.
Unless there's the next thing he wants to bring up, as long as we're in a break. Do you want to talk about the cast members, or, you know, where we've seen them before, anything else?
Oh, yeah. So, again, indie film. So a lot of these cast members are probably people no one's seen before. Mm-hmm. But the one we casted as Serona did just get picked up on... I keep forgetting the name of the show. It's a Josh Brolin Amazon Prime show. It's a Western, and I'm spacing the name of it. Outer Range, that's what it's called. So she was cast in that as a recurring character. So we made a good call with her. And she's also... casted in a video game as a main character that's being released pretty soon. I don't think she's allowed to talk about the name of it yet, so I can't say. But
how exciting, though!
Yeah,
yeah. It's always. I am going to be editing the hell out of this. It's always encouraging when you pick somebody, and then after they've been in your production, like, they get really busy and really popular.
And yeah.
Ah, yes.
And then they
had good instincts.
Then everybody has to come back and see your film because that's where they got started.
That was the hope, yeah.
Yeah.
One other piece of information that was really cool about this film. So we made this for an incredibly tiny budget, like very tiny. And we pulled it off. We actually got invited out to a premiere for a Netflix film out at Warner Brothers. Like, how did you do that? And
hire me.
They gave me a lot of invaluable feedback. Valuable feedback. Jeez Louise. It was enough to get the attention of allowing us to talk to some people out there, and it was great.
Well, and the other thing is, it shows that you are on their radar.
Yeah,
That's got to feel good. Right, yeah, there, and right there, that's got to feel great.
And the fun news is one of them I've actually become pretty good friends with just over the years since he's seen the film. He's an editor, and he wants to edit the sequel. Like, he's all about it. He wants to be a part of this, hence why we're trying to push for a certain goal so I can afford him. But he's directed a Netflix film as well, so he's got a bit more notoriety, mm-hmm. and it's... definitely someone I would love to work with. He is just the sweetest guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been speaking with Wesley Clark, the filmmaker responsible for Serona, a feature film that got 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. And
its upcoming sequel, Serona Valkyrie's Shadow.
And the crowdfunding is going to be on
SeedandSpark.com.
SeedandSpark.com. And that's where you should go to find out more information about this. The whole thing kicks off. The fundraising kicks off September 24th. And when it does, we're going to be contributing, and we hope you do too. Thank you for joining us, Wesley. It's been a kick and a half.
Yeah, thank you again. Thank you again for having me.
Absolutely. You have been listening to episode 276 of Sci-Fi.Radio's production of The Event Horizon for September 14th, 2024. Our guest this evening has been Wesley Clark, producer, writer, and director of the science fiction mystery thriller Serona. The sequel to this film, Serona Valkyrie's Shadow, will be entering a round of crowdfunding on September 24th, 2024 on seedandspark.com. This show will air again tomorrow, September 15th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the upcoming Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the airtimes have passed, you will find this episode and others on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbay FM, Pandora, Stitcher, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi radio and become a patron of the station. We are listener-supported sci-fi and fantasy fandom radio, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, our production team, the writers for our Geek News website, our business operation fees, our music licensing, and they help us procure and maintain the equipment and other resources we need to stay on the air. We have been broadcasting continuously since 2009, and we are grateful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL is again patreon.com/sci-fi radio. The Event Horizon on sci-fi.radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.